Hello, and welcome everyone to Inspired Leadership. Our podcast today is going to be probably one of my favorites because I get to be on the line with two of the most amazing women in the world, and both of them have a special place in my heart. My beautiful co-host, Dawn Earhart Witte, I'd like for you to say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. And then my best friend in the world, our guest today, Donna Ronca. Say hello, Donna.
Hi, everybody.
Okay. Now, I'm going to introduce my friend Donna, whom I have known for over 30 years. And this is one of, I don't think we've ever done anything like this. Donna and I have actually been business partners through time and cohorts at various activities, all of which, you know, were full of laughter and carrying on and lots of opportunity for growing leadership, I can tell you that. But to give you a good overview of who Donna is, she is an expert in healthcare industry sales and has been an active leader in several volunteer organizations throughout her career. She has award-winning sales teams in the healthcare product market, the pharmaceutical industry, and in the diagnostic laboratory arena. In addition, Donna has spent many years sharing her passion for making a difference for women and girls by serving in top leadership roles within Seroptimist International of the Americas, an organization that works to allow women and girls opportunities to achieve their goals through education. Donna has worked in the healthcare sales field for over 30 years. She was 10 when she started. that was supposed to be funny, girls. Successfully selling medical equipment with companies such as Intelligent Medical Systems and Kimberly-Clark. She has led multiple award-winning sales teams with pharmaceutical giant AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals and has shared her successful leadership strategies in the diagnostic laboratory field with Quest Diagnostics and Thermo Fisher Scientific. And what's my favorite part of my experience with Donna was actually meeting through Seroptimist International. I was a member for about 20 years, and Donna, you've been a member 35-ish?
Sure, let's say that. A lot.
Yeah, a lot. Yes, again, you were 10 when you got into the first thing.
A baby. I was a baby.
Yes. And what I love about Seroptimist, and I've told Dawn this before, is that we had an opportunity to try on leadership, to actually see what worked, see what fit. And then we were encouraged to actually grow in leadership. And I know that you definitely took that on. So I would like to go with two paths with you. I'd like to talk about your leadership at your work and then your leadership in the community service organization called Seroptimist. So tell us about leadership with a team in a very difficult field like pharmaceutical sales, for an example, or whichever one you'd like to use. Your current one would be good, too.
Well, I have to say that there are a little bit different forms of leadership when you're working with people who actually get paid and work under you, and in a volunteer organization where you have to be a little bit more careful because they're not getting paid and you still need to lead them in the members in a direction that you'd like them to go or you'd like to work with them that way. At work, as a leader of a sales team, I think that it's important to make sure that you're incorporating the pros and cons of every individual on the team, and you have to learn that. And you have to change your leadership style with each one of those individuals in order to get the best out of the team overall. With the volunteer organization, it's really conveying a vision. It's knowing the vision of the organization and making sure that volunteers that are working with you and under you are adhering to that vision and staying on a pathway so that you can be successful in whatever goal you're trying to reach. And reaching the goal is also, of course, important in a sales team as well.
Right. And in Seroptimist, as we've said, the goal is helping women and girls find their pathway to education so that they can then have a better life. And in a lot of cases, I remember we were helping women who had re-entered the workforce or gone back to school so that they could re-enter the workforce and take care of their children. And usually it was, oftentimes it was women who had been abused in domestic violence situations. So we're talking about some pretty heady kinds of life situations that we were involved in, wouldn't you say?
Yes. In Seroptimus, and how I know you and I got interested in Seroptimus was personal stories of women who have been through, who've really been through life, who've really had some bad things happen to them and for one reason or another, and were not able to move forward with their education or with opportunities that may have presented themselves to them. And so being able to, and it's not just in the United States, but also around the world, where women traditionally have been in a different situation than men have been in. And so to be with what I love and what I know you love about Seroptimus is that we're able to target our work towards women specifically, towards women and girls specifically, so that we can find ways for them to actually live their dreams and through education, by allowing educational opportunities for them so they can get where they want to go in life and to really, you know, elevate themselves. And that is what you and I were interested in. And with the Seroptimus organization, that's what 150,000 women around the world are all interested in. So it's a little bit easier, I think, to lead an organization like within an organization like that, because we all are of the same purpose. We all are of the same, with the same goal in mind. And that's why we joined. It's a little bit different with a work sales team, but for sure, Seroptimus has grown into a huge organization that offers a massive amount of educational opportunities to women around the world, and to be able to be a leader in that organization is really special to me, and I know special to you as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dawn, do you have a question before I go ahead?
Yes, please. Donna, one of the reasons I think that we all have connected so strongly is because we have that same desire and passion for helping others, helping women, helping children, you know, live into their highest potential, live into their dreams. But I wanted to ask, I love that you were saying the differences between, you know, working for, you know, a business versus a charity. And do you find one more, do you gravitate towards one more than the other, find one more enjoyable than the other? And what are some of the parallels also between both of them, you know, the charity and the work environment?
Well, my preference is for the volunteer organization, that's in particular Seroptimus for me. But I certainly have enjoyed my career over the years. It's just I'm getting closer to retirement now, so I'm a little more interested in the volunteer as opposed to the work, if truth be told. I think one of the things that I've loved the most is being able to develop sales reps to go into whatever it is that they wanted to go, whatever field or whatever area of interest that they had, because sometimes it's not sales, sometimes it's not with a medical equipment or a pharmaceutical or a healthcare type company, maybe it's something different. But to be able to identify those things and work with those people individually to get where they want to go, there's a lot of satisfaction in that. It's not always necessarily associated with a company, and so there's a little bit of a challenge there to be successful with a sales rep within a sales team. On the volunteer side, you know, you're working with people who also have that same passion, or they wouldn't have joined the organization. And I think in a volunteer organization, now you have to deal with individuals who are probably pretty opinionated and pretty strong in their beliefs because they've joined this organization, and trying to channel that towards a goal can sometimes be interesting, because in our particular situation, there's a lot of really strong women who have achieved so much within that organization, and they all want to have their voices heard, as they should. And you have to do that in some sort of an organized manner, and that is sometimes challenging. And in my case, I always try and go back to the mission. What's our mission and what's our goal? And anything that's not on that pathway, let's set to the side so that we can get to where we want to go. And oftentimes with Seroptimus, it's either doing some sort of a hands-on project within our communities, or raising funds for to be able to provide scholarships or monetary opportunities for women around the world in different types of capacities.
I love how you said that you go back to your core values. That I think
yes.
is a very it's one of our inspired traits.
Yes, it actually is.
Well, I'm going to read the 10 traits here in a second, but I'm remembering something about the opinionated strong women part of True Optimist.
Yeah.
And I remember one biennium, and we always did things in terms of every 2 years was a different focus for either the region or the club level or whatever. And I remember that I was in charge of membership for a particular biennium for our entire region. And that means there were 1,600 members, and they were always used to doing the exact same membership drives. We didn't want to do anything that was, you know, spitting in the holy water. You know, no, we have to do it the way we've always done it, because that's how we've always done it, and, you know, things will just fall apart if we don't. And I changed just about everything about membership. And what's funny about that is I had to enroll every single level of leadership to be with me to take that plunge. And I had what we called a dog and pony show. And we went around to all the clubs, of which I think there were 50. And I had everybody on the same page, working off the same script, to try to change the culture a little bit, to bring in more members and not be worrying about getting the membership plaque, but to actually, you know, and get more people in the community involved in True Optimist, because it is still one of the best kept secrets, I would imagine, still, Donna. I've been out for 10 years, but I think it's still the best kept secret in the world. And, you know, sometimes the only thing you can say is, well, it's like Rotary for women, you know, which is just a terrible thing. but my point is to be able to enroll and nurture and encourage people to come with you and say, okay, I know this is not how we've always done it, but trust me, I know we can get there if we'll just try to go this one time, just try one time with me. Have you had that happen with you? I know you have. So,
you know, and it's funny that you sort of segue into this, because it's something that I was thinking about when I was thinking about this conversation we were going to have. And that is, what is one of the most difficult things that I have found, whether it's a sales team or whether it's a volunteer team or whether, frankly, if it's a family team as well, is helping people navigate through change, because it's something that we are always going to have. There's always going to be something new. There's always going to be different levels of change, how much it affects you or how much it doesn't. But to get people to move with you in a direction towards a goal that is going to change how they do things traditionally within whatever framework they're in. I with the True Optimist organization, I know, Deborah, you will totally be on board with this. There this continues to this day. There is a pin that you can wear with the True Optimist logo on it. And the True Optimist logo has been the same since 1921, when True Optimist was formed. And because True Optimist is now a worldwide organization, there are the figure of the lady, which is pictured on the pin, is viewed in different ways in different cultures. And so over the years, we've, as an organization, found a need to make a change to the pin so that it is a better representation of women in all cultures. And to get people to understand that we're going to change the logo and that it's a good thing is not easy. You're right about, we've always done it this way. This has always been our logo. We love our logo. We don't want to give it up. But to open people's eyes to why a change is necessary in a volunteer organization is difficult, because you really need to explain yourself. You need to get them on board. You need to do all the footwork to get them to get on board with you. In a sales organization, that's a little different, because sometimes it's always better, in my opinion, to be able to give someone the why of why you're making a change if you can. But sometimes you can't tell. Sometimes you can't give all the details behind it, and they just need to get on board and go along, and that's you pay them, and so they do. But so it's a little bit different dynamic when you're working in a volunteer organization versus somebody that you actually that actually works for you or for your company. But leading in either case, leading someone through change is tricky, and takes some time and some thought, and certainly isn't something that you can just. To me, it's not something you can just do off the cuff and be successful with.
Wow, you know,
absolutely.
Change is something, you know, inside the business world, inside a volunteer organization, change is just something that we all have to deal with every single day. You know, that is part of our human existence. And I think that, you know, being able to navigate that, that's one of your gifts in the world. You are such a light, and you help people, you're an inspired leader.
Well, that's the goal. That's my goal. And it's something I learned a long time ago when I first was given my first sales team, and I had been promoted into a sales leadership position, and so I had acquired a team that already had a manager that had moved on, and I learned that I really needed to sit with each person individually, because the knowledge that I had about the individuals on the team was the perspective of the prior manager. And I remember one sales rep in particular, her name was Sandy, and she was so downtrodden at that point. She was not happy in the position. She was not happy with her progress and what she was doing. She was so, I want to say depleted when I talked with her. But I tried to totally separate myself from the opinion of the prior leader and really sit down and listen to her and listen to her challenges and some of the things she wanted out of life and what she wanted out of the position, and to be able to really personalize her own experience with her. And she turned out to be just one of my best, most delightful sales representatives. She, just by telling her, you know, starting today, we have a brand new slate. We are starting from scratch. Nothing that you did in the past matters starting today, and let's just move forward together. And she just responded to, not that my style of leadership is always the best for a particular person, but for her it was. And so we were just able to move forward together. It's an example of that I always tried to keep with myself whenever I took over a new sales team or brought on a new sales rep, is to start them from fresh and to listen to specifically what they want out of the position and try and maneuver within that framework, because then you're going to get so much more from that person. And I don't know, there's maybe only one or two incidences out of all the sales teams that I've led where maybe we didn't part on the best of terms. Every other one I've had, I have great relationships with past sales reps, just in life, not because I was so great, but because we were so great together. And in the volunteer organization with Seroptimus, it's kind of the same thing. You can do it a little more broadly because at least we all have the same goal in mind. But sometimes to get people to do something different or to embrace a kind of change, you need to figure out what their motivations are and what their personality is like and what their life experiences are, and try and touch them from that way in order to get them on board with a change or a different attitude that you would like them to have. So just sitting back and looking at individuals as a part of a team has been successful for me in both organizations.
Oh, that's such great advice.
It totally is. What I just heard is really cool, and that is it's not necessarily people versus the mission. It's people and the mission that has been the reason you are a good leader. In other words, your focus is not mission-driven, and forget the fact that there's people that are going to pay the price if it's not fun, right, or lucrative,
right,
or exciting or interesting. So I have, my experience of you is that it's all about people and not people instead of the mission. Does that fit for you?
Yeah, you know, the mission is the mission. That's the point. With SirOptimus, we are SirOptimus because we want to help women and girls. And if what we're doing is getting off track of that, that's the wrong way to go. But you need people to make that mission happen. So the mission is always the most important thing, but you need to use the people to achieve the goal. So you can't inspire and empower people as a group unless you are able to look at them as individuals as well. That doesn't necessarily hold for all incidences and in all cases for sure. But for me, if I see roadblocks or barricades to getting to the goal, I try and take myself back to basics and look at the individuals. Why isn't this happening with each individual? Why isn't, you know, is this particular SirOptimus on board with a particular fundraiser? Or why is this particular SirOptimus not wanting to make the change to the pin, for example? What is it that's causing that roadblock for her? Because in the volunteer organization, people they have a lot of respect for each other as a rule. And so one person's opinion can sway a group. And I guess that's really in all situations, but in my experience, particularly in SirOptimus, if you can get a few on board, you can tend to get more on board a little more easily. And so looking at the individual first and then getting some people to jump on the boat with you is a little bit easier. In the work world, in my career, within my sales career, I don't have to work with as many people at a time. Maybe my sales teams were 8 to 10 to 12 people. It's not trying to move 1,500 or 150,000 or whatever the number is that we're working with within the whole organization. So it's a little more easy. It's a little more easily done to be able to work with a person individually to get to their specific goal that will then lead to the overall goal. So it's a little bit, you got to take it a little bit different, but all of it to me is always getting back to basics. If the goal is not being reached, why isn't it being reached within the individual? What's their motivation and why isn't it happening? Or why is it happening? And then being able to take even better leaps and bounds.
I remember a couple of times, well, actually I'll just speak to one time. The first time I ever introduced the idea of an organization chart, our volunteer organization, that had to also be like, what? We're going to do what? But I was going to be the chairperson for a major fundraiser. And I thought, you know, I understand accountability and holding others capable. I also know that I actually tend to want to just do everything myself because maybe I don't hold others as capable as I hold myself sometimes. You know, which is a failing, which is definitely a failing. If you know, that's not playing nice with others, and it's like kind of like running
it's
with scissors. But
it's a
delegating thing.
It's not a, a failing. It's a learning.
Right. Okay. Well, the first time we had the org chart, it was awesome because it was an opportunity for everyone to feel like there's a place here for you to falter a little bit and ask for help if you need to, because I built it into the org chart. In other words, it was, okay, you three are going to report up to this person right above you, and then there's a layer there, and they're going to report up to me. And if at any time you can't actually accomplish what you're supposed to be doing and you've agreed to do, just tell the person that you report to. You don't have to tell me. Just tell that person, and then we'll kind of fill in for you. And it really started to work very well. At least it did for me, you know, because I felt like I had, like you said, you know, I could inspire and empower each level. And we were doing really, really well with that. And I always used the org chart for my things that I was chairperson of. I just couldn't do it without it. I just thought, you know what, I've got to know that everybody knows. If you just tell one other person that you can't perform, then I won't feel like I have to do it all myself. So maybe that was selfish on my part.
Well, maybe. But delegation is a huge element of being a good leader. I mean, you have to be able to delegate. As I said before, one of the things that I took the greatest joy in my professional life is being able to develop my sales reps into being whatever that is that they wanted to be ultimately. I had a sales rep when I was working for a company that sold dental equipment, and she wanted to be a dentist. And once I really learned that, it was helpful for me. So I knew she wasn't going to be with me long term, but I knew that she had a real passion for wanting to be a dentist and going into dentist offices and learning what they did and being able to sell our product to them. So I knew that her passion for the industry was going to be the key for her. It's different for other people. Some people are motivated by money. Some people are motivated by recognition, by different things. But for her, it was just a passion for the industry and for being a dentist. And that was, if I hadn't really taken the time to sit and work with her and learn that about her, she probably would not have lasted even as long as she did, because her heart wasn't in what we were doing. It was where she was going. So having an org chart or having that sort of a setup lets people see where they're going to go and lets you see where they're going to go. So I got a little bit off track on that topic a little bit, but yeah, I think using some sort of an org chart or some sort of a hierarchy or some sort of in business, it's easy because you know what the organization looks like and
right.
what the hierarchy is and how you go. But in a volunteer organization, it really has to be a little bit different. And one thing in SirOptimist that they've done over the years is we've gone from, we're still in the process of doing it, is at the club level, which is the smallest, most intimate level within the community. Sometimes little clubs tend to have a lot of leadership positions and a lot of things you can do, but you need some Indian band chiefs. And so being able to sort of simplify has been really helpful for making our organization easier for people to join and therefore making it easier for us to achieve the goals that as an organization we have. And so simplification and understanding and getting everybody on board with the org chart, you know, is the term that you're using. And that's important, and it's got to work for everyone. And so sometimes that's a challenge. Sometimes that's a change that you've got to lead people through, and sometimes it's challenging. But in the end, especially in SirOptimist, when you can, as a leader, you see the bigger picture and you can see how things work, not only within an individual club, but as you were saying, within a district and with a region and within a federation, which is the different levels we have in that organization. When you can see the whole picture and sort of bring that whole picture to the smaller group, it's helpful to get people to move forward and to make things easier on themselves and then therefore on the organization. It's just another barrier that you can get through, and that's a tool.
Fantastic.
You know what?
Fantastic.
One of the reasons that we asked you, Donna, is because, and I'll let Deborah read these off because these are her beautifully written leadership traits, but, you know, it's the visionary spirit that you were just speaking about. I think that is one of the reasons that you are such an inspired leader. Deborah, would you like to those off? And
I certainly will.
Okay.
And
as we say
every time, I wrote these 10 traits with Dawn in mind. She did not know that I was writing them. I was writing about leadership and inspiration. And I just realized that Dawn is an example of inspired leadership to the utmost. So a 10X leader has got, you know, 10 times something. So here are the 10 traits that we think show what a 10X leader is. The first one is singularity of purpose, ability to ask for help, awareness of opportunities, willingness to burn the boat, confidence in core values, strong belief system, acceptance of responsibility to a calling, willingness to share credit and build team, ability to see the beauty and inherent good in others, and finally, sense of awe and wonder. And you know, what the container for all of that, of course, is the visionary spirit, the passionate creativity, and the bold strength of character that you would expect in a leader. And Donna, you certainly modeled that and always have, and frankly, you're my hero where SeroPtimist is concerned. I love the way you have been a SeroPtimist. And I know that if we talk about the number one trait, the singularity of purpose, what we're saying is that 10X leaders get in one lane and stay there with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and heart and mind. And I believe that when you became a SeroPtimist, you had in mind and in heart your path. You knew that you wanted to lead. And your rise through the ranks has been spectacular. So why don't you talk about that? I'm very proud of you for all you've done with SeroPtimist. It's a big deal. And I just want to also say that I was your installing officer when you became governor of a region, which was also an amazing thing.
Yeah. So go ahead. You were also my handmaiden in waiting in during several different events that we had where I needed help. So I have to say one of the things about that is that as a leader, it's important to look for new leaders and to ease potential new leaders onto that pathway along with you. I think that's a responsibility. Once you are a leader, that is something that you owe. It's like your rent. You know, you pay your rent. This is the cost that I pay for the price that I pay for being a leader is to be able to bring others up with me. I think that's just a responsibility. When I first joined SeroPtimist, it was because somebody asked me, and I was so flattered that it was all these businesswomen thought of me to bring in. And so I was just in awe of the organization for quite a while. And it didn't really occur to me for quite a long time that I could be a leader. Now, I knew I wanted it. One of my motivating factors that I know about myself, recognition is a big thing for me. But I looked at all these businesswomen that were older than me. I was pretty young when I got in and so accomplished, much more accomplished than I felt like I was at the time. And I remember one in particular, and Deborah, you'll remember Mary Belo. She was the governor of a region at the time, and I didn't think she knew who I was. I didn't think she even noticed me. And she came to me and said, you know, Donna, I think that you should run for this particular office that was coming up. And I'm like, what do you mean, me? You know, and she's like, yeah, I think that, you know, people listen to you, and I think you, you know, have good stories to tell, and I think that you would do really well in this role. You should consider it. I had never thought of it before, but to have somebody that I looked up to put that out to me, just throw out the possibility to me, I started to think about it. Excuse me. And so and then I started to build my path. It's like, gee, I wonder what it'd be like to be, you know, to start out as a district director and then to move on to governor and then to move on to what I didn't even dream beyond that. And so I started a process. I knew what I wanted to accomplish in each one of the roles that I felt like I wanted to do. And I knew that there was a way that I needed to get there. And in the SeroPtimist organization, and I wish that I could say that we're all just so inspired by someone that we vote for them and that's how they get into these positions. But yeah, I had to have a strategy. You know, I had to make sure that people knew who I was. I was not a new SeroPtimist at the time, but still, there's a lot of people that needed to vote that didn't know me necessarily. And so I needed to inspire votes. I needed to get my name out there. I needed to make sure that people knew that this is something that I wanted and what I would bring to the table if I was elected. And so I started that early. I ran for a couple of, I don't want to say minor offices, but lower responsibility offices, and I lost. And I lost a couple of times throughout my elected career in SeroPtimist. But I looked at those as stepping stones, because once I ran, then they knew who I was. They had an opportunity to hear me give a speech with what my passions were and what my vision was, and then they could choose to follow me or not. But I had to run and lose a couple of times, and I knew that was going to be part of the process. So I was never horribly disappointed if I lost. I just knew that that meant next time I had a much better chance of winning. And that is how it worked out for me. I ran for district director and I lost. And then the next time I ran and I won, and then I ran for governor. And I actually won the first time out on that because it was apparently so charming, but I was able to win on that one. But I also ran, after governor, I had the opportunity to run for the board of directors, which was it's one of the highest positions that you can get to in that organization. And it was a magnificent place to be, actually. And I ran for that. I might have run for that twice, but that getting name recognition at that level, because you really are throughout, 20 countries and getting a lot of people to know who you were that way was more difficult. But so I ran a couple of times. And then when I finally won, I was thrilled to have won, but I think it led me to a knowledge of how that process works and how to encourage a new leader to come on. I kind of need to lay out what my pathway was. I would get really disappointed or sad for people who would run and be just debilitated when they didn't win an election. And it's like, no, this is part of the process. This is going to make it easier for you the next time around. And your time is coming. And so don't let, something like a lost election discourage you, because we're going to have another one. And now people are going to know who you are, and they're going to know what you stand for and what your platform is and what your goals are. And so they're going to want to vote for you next time because now they know who you are. So it's the same sort of a thought that I have at smaller levels within the club organization, which is maybe 15 to 30, 35 people. At that level, you have a president. And sometimes it's hard to get people to step up into leadership if the other members don't celebrate them. And so within the Seroptimus organization, it is a little passion of mine to make sure that that clubs celebrate presidents. Celebrate those who are willing to step up into a leadership position and to serve that way, because it's not the path for everyone. Not everybody wants to be a leader, nor should be a leader, nor is that a problem. We all have our different goals and things we want in life, and sometimes that isn't someone's particular goal. But if it is, let's celebrate those people that are willing to do it, because there is a sense of responsibility that comes along with it, and we need to thank them for that.
Yes. Donna, did you ever get to a place where you just thought, why am I doing this? This is too hard. I could just go doing my regular stuff. Like, why am I putting the effort? It's too much. And just kind of give up and walk away. Did you ever have moments of those thoughts?
Not so much. Well, yes. And I think it was because there were changes within my life that made what I was doing made me want to go a different way. For example, I was a sales manager or a sales director for many years in my career. And it got to a point where I ended up in a new relationship with someone, and I was going to move, and I'm getting closer to retirement, and so my mind is sort of going towards that. And I had a new blended family to move into, and so my focus, the importance of what was going on in my life, was a little bit different. And so also being in a sales manager, sales director, whatever your title is, that role was more than I wanted to do at that point. So, even right now, I'm a sales rep for my company. I like that. The travel, I didn't want to travel as much. I wanted to work within my own territory, which is big and provides me with financial incentives that I'm happy with. And this is kind of how I want to finish my professional career. It's a choice that I've made that I'm happy with. I don't envy sales managers who have got to sit down and do reviews every year for their sales team. It is a chore, and it is something I'm happy not to have to do anymore. So there were other things in my life that became more important than that. And so then I took a step back. In the Seroptimus organization, when I finished my role on the Federation and the Federation Board. I never would have given that up. That is so much my personal passion. That I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the women that I got to work with on that in that role. The work that we did during the time that I was on the board was important, and I felt like it was the most important thing that I've done in my life was to have served on that board, because I was able to leave a little legacy. I was able to leave something behind, and it was most apparent in that particular area. But so my passion for leadership within Serapis has never wavered. There are only so many places you can go. There's only so many things you can do within SirOptimus in an upward motion. But that doesn't mean that I'm not interested in leading smaller groups or specific areas of interest. We have a lot of different scholarship programs, and we have a lot of fundraising we do. And like Deborah had mentioned, we do a lot of searching for new members to bring into our fold. And those are different ways to lead. So my passion for leadership within my volunteer organization hasn't wavered at all, but how I do it is different than how I've done it, you know, through different years.
Oh, thank you.
And I, on the other hand, have had several phone calls with different people about, okay, there are no clubs in Arkansas. There is nothing I can do here. I cannot become a SirOptimist again in this arrangement, you know, and I'm thinking, gosh, this is frustrating because in my heart, I am a SirOptimist. I've been gone for 10 years or more, but I've always been a SirOptimist. Sort of like if you're a Marine, once a Marine, always a Marine. So yeah. I just, it's like, ah. So I guess, and the fact that I ended up developing the best friendships of my life through SirOptimist, and I learned to be the leader that I am in the rest of my life because of my SirOptimist leadership, I just think anybody that can have an opportunity to be in a service club, not just to do service in the community, but also to put yourself through the paces, you know, let yourself step up and see, you know, see who salutes, because there's really nothing like it. And it is a more loving environment than, you know, than some. You know, it's a service club. It's like if you're not supporting other women, you probably shouldn't be a member. So hopefully it's a good experience for people. And I was going to actually ask you to talk about legacy planning and training your replacement. And you hit that so beautifully with what you had just been saying, because I'm kind of waffling around here. But when I was doing that thing with membership, one of the things I was teaching all the clubs is that you cannot be the president over and over and over again and have a strong group of people ready to step up when you just can't do it anymore. You know, it's like, I've been president 4 times. I can't do it anymore. Well, you're the only one that can be president because you don't let anybody else be president, right? Train your replacement, make it look good. And like you were saying, celebrate that position and don't have so many board positions that when you do your installation, when everybody stands up in the front to be installed, you know, by the installing officer, there's nobody left in the rest of the room because you're all being installed as officers. It's not going to work.
Right.
So it was my favorite thing to be a part of. And I miss it like crazy. And I just love hearing your experiences because I feel like I'm still having them because I get to listen to yours. So it's just cool. It's very cool.
Well, the legacy of leadership, like I said, is that's kind of it's your responsibility to do that. And it's not just within the volunteer organization, certainly, because that's how I started, because someone said to me, gee, I think you would be a good leader. And I had never really pictured myself that way in that framework before. But in a sales organization or in the work world as well, when I sit down individually with my sales reps and this is my favorite part was to work on with them and develop them into what they wanted to be. Some of them were clear leaders and that's what their path was. It was easy for them to say, yes, that's what I want to do. That's my goal. And as a sales rep and anybody who's a sales rep out there, you know that sales reps, they like to raise their hand if it means they can promote themselves. So that's what we do. And it's a positive thing. But then there are others that you know are good at something and could be good at something, but just don't see the potential within themselves. And so to mm-hmm. sit with them individually and encourage them in an individual way, like I was able to do with Sandy and really with so many other ones, because that was the most fun part for me of that job, was to be able to develop a sales rep into whatever it is they want it to be. And it's not only maybe for me the biggest joy, but it's also the biggest responsibility that I had, was to make sure that they went in the direction that they wanted to go. And that's, it's almost a foundation. If you're going to be a leader, it's almost a foundation. You have to be able to move people forward, or you're really not inspiring and empowering, which to me, that's what a leader does. You inspire and empower others to get where they want to go. And generally towards a specific goal, but maybe a team goal, but you want to inspire and empower. And if you don't know what inspires them, you don't know how to empower them, then you're not going to be successful. And so working with an individual, therefore working with a team, therefore achieving the goal that you want to get to, there's a process and a pathway. And you can't do it if you're not bringing people on board to follow behind you. It's one of the reasons that people have asked me, and it's happened to me a couple times, where somebody who had in Seraphimus who had held a position before ran against me for a position, and I was the newbie coming in, and it rubbed me the wrong way. Not because she wasn't a great person and had done the job well before, but because it was like organizations thrive because new blood and new ideas need to come out. And you can't do that if you've got the same people in the same positions all the time forever. And maybe that says something for our political system, which I will set aside for a different conversation sometime. But I think that there comes a point where you are done and you have accomplished what you want to with the position that you've of leadership that you've been in. And then you move on. You move on to lead something else, or you move on to step back and let others lead, or you change your focus and work on a different goal. But you can't be static. And I think that it's a detriment to an organization, whether it be a company or whether it be a volunteer organization, to always have the same people in all the time. Sometimes you have to, but I think in the end that it's less of a positive than it could be.
Exactly.
So much sage advice on every single level, Deborah. I can't even unpack all of that. I'll have to listen to this 17 times before I get all of the wisdom.
I know.
Just because I talk a lot.
She's amazing.
I'm in sales.
Well, she talks is. A lot. You should have been her business partner. Oh, my God. I tried to get a word in edgewise. It's like, Donna, it's not your turn right now. Yeah. You have to stop talking.
it is a problem with me.
It is a funnier thing about that is I'm actually the same, you know, like people might say that to me, like, Deborah, you have to stop talking. It's not your turn. So it's like, uh-oh, we can't both be in the same conversation. I wanted to add one thing, though. It occurs to me when you're talking about the pathway for leadership, and then when you've done what you wanted to do and you step aside or go lead somewhere else, maybe a really good thing to add to that continuum is the word mentor, so that the last thing you do in your leadership life in a great organization like Seraphimus is you know that the last thing after you've got your legacy sealed is to be the mentor. And that way you've still got that elevated position, even in your own mind, you know, I'm a legend because I'm a mentor. but at least it's the next thing, you know, you can kind of gracefully bow out after that and go, okay, I am done mentoring you people. You're driving me crazy. But yeah, I think it's awesome. And did you want to provide any other comments, Donna, before we close, because we are basically at the end of our show, and this has been amazing, just like I knew it would be. And I am going to listen to it again because I know that there were things that I was writing notes. I've got like 5 pages of notes, and it's all stellar.
Before we let Donna have the last word, I just want to chime in really quick and say, Donna, you and your friends, you know, you've known each other for over 30 years. You just met me and my friend Stephanie last year at Deborah's wedding, and you opened your arms and welcomed us and loved us. And, you know, we just, you know, we lift each other, and I watched how you all just showed up for her and seamlessly made everything happen. And it was just so inspiring and beautiful to watch women supporting each other in that way. And then, you know, welcoming in the way you welcomed us. So you are definitely light in the world. And I really thank you for being with us today.
Well, I have to say, and that is sort of contributes to my ending comments, if you will, is that I think once you've been a leader in one respect or another, whether it's your work or whether it's your volunteer organization or whatever area that it is, that kind of that becomes part of your personality, and that then carries into other things like your family. So even though you may not see yourself as a leader in a company or an organization, you certainly might be able to see yourself as a leader within your family, because those traits carry on through. They become part of your attitude and your ideas about everything and your outlook. And so leadership isn't really just about work or organization, but also in lots of different areas of your life. And so anybody who doesn't think that they're a leader, if they look closely enough at what they're doing, they will find that they are. And that they have the capacity to be in whatever area that their heart desires. But also, you're right about the girlfriends. And if I had one piece of advice to give to any woman in the world, it's like, get yourself some girlfriends. I've had this group of girlfriends since we started in Seroptimus, so it's like 35 years ago. There's eight of us. We are there for each other no matter what in all the highs and lows of life. We are there. I know that if I need something, I just call and they will be here. And it's the same for me with them. And I have learned over the years that not a lot of women have that type of group around them, have that kind of support group around them. And so anybody who's sort of maybe flying through life a little bit and not hanging on to relationships that are important, you have to do that. You have to have your girlfriends. And if you haven't started yet, start now and start that little group so that you have really one of the most magnificent parts of your life in place. And those things are lifelong and can move on and incorporate new people. And that is it's really not a leadership trait, but it is certainly something that will make your life more enjoyable.
Absolutely.
You are so right. You are so right. And I'm just so blessed that I am part of that group you're talking about, because I don't know what I would do if I wasn't. So thankfully, that's not a thing that I have to worry about, because you guys are so awesome and we just have so much fun, even if it's just over the phone. So I am going to close the show, and I'm just fantastic. Thank you for sharing with us about love, respect, self-worth, legacy, you know, the legacy of leadership, all those things, inspired leadership, all of that stuff that you spoke so well about. And I love you. I love you, Dawn. And I'm going to say goodbye, and we will pick it up another time. Everyone have a great day, and go out there and lead with love and purpose. Bye now.
Sending everyone love. Bye. Love you.
Bye now.